lets them understand some of the implications of working and having money and taking care of money.
Absolutely. A part of this is of the program is we've got a guy on site. And twice a week, they have to go through training with what to do with money.
Well, this is an outsider, so I don't live in your community. I'm very, very interested in it, try to understand it, but it's empathetic, it's vicarious, it's external. But one of my senses is that one of the problems of the hopelessness of this 10 to 15-year-old boys group and the hopelessness in the community somewhat is this inability to see a plan, to visualize a plan, to have a role model that allows them to understand how it is they might kind of get themselves out of this hopeless state. And of course, most of that relates to ultimately getting employed, making money, understanding the advantage of money. And so instead of at a young age finding shortcuts to get money, like stealing a car or stealing money or doing things
selling drugs,
You want to have a kid see a path that's totally legitimate and a path that gets the reward, this sort of self-recognition of satisfaction you can get from a job. I take it that's part of what you're teaching.
Well, so Sandy, when you and I were kids, I saw my dad and men like him all throughout the neighborhood and community where I live get up every morning with their lunch pail.
Right.
And they went. And they went to work, and they came back 3 or 4 o'clock in the afternoon, Monday through Friday.
And they drove a car. They got in the car they owned,
and they had a home.
They had a home, a house they walked out of, and a car they got into.
They were providers, right? And so you saw that, and whether or not, whatever type of job it was. That's what they did. They worked. They provided, mm-hmm. And that's children don't see that in central cities anymore. They don't. Dad's not there for the most part, and so a kid can't learn from, especially a young boy. He can't learn that this is kind of what happens, right? And so we've got to teach them that. We've got to teach them work ethic. I was talking with someone on yesterday. It eludes me who he was, but we were talking about the fact that the kids, they start these jobs at 16 years old, Sandy. They get fired right away because they've got their cell phone with them.
Well, I know this for a fact just from some of the various organizations I've been involved with that have reached in to try and aggressively hire kids. And there are things about working that we all just take for granted that aren't learned in the community in which they live, like getting to work on time.
Yeah, or school. I mean, school.
Getting to school on time. The importance of being reliable is lost in an environment in which reliability wasn't important.
Well, you're talking work ethic.
Yeah.
And
well, but it's basic ethic. I mean, it isn't just like working hard at work. It's all the fundamentals associated with being reliable about being at work and having, and all of that, I think, relates to what you're talking about, which is the role model.
So I was talking with a bunch of guys last night, successful guys in the business world, and we all had one thing in common as we were sitting there. I said, you have a paper out? Yeah, yeah. You have a paper out? Yeah, yeah, yeah. You have paper out? Yeah. All of us started working at 12 years old.
Mm-hmm.
We had paper routes. And my father clearly stated, if you get this paper out, you're the one who's going to do the work, right? I'm not getting up and doing this.
Right.
So you learn early. And that was the training grounds, because it didn't matter whether it was in the city or in rural areas, people had paper routes.
Right.
And so that was a training thing that our nation had for, especially boys. Girls had it too. And when that disappeared, nothing replaced it. And so young people have not learned, and unfortunately, especially in urban centers, what it is to get to place on time.
Well, and also if they don't
live, sir.
And if they don't live in a home that where they have the role model of someone who's been doing that ahead of them. I mean, to me, this is what's wrong with the conservative impulse to say that people should pull themselves up by their bootstraps when clearly they, some people don't have bootstraps to grab onto, and they need something like what you've created, which is this voice of the elders. I mean, I think it's super. I mean, I think it's the kind of thing that could really matter.
You know, Sandy, I think that, as a matter of fact, I know, as I was, you know, talking with our guys, I never forget to tell them about the work that they're doing, and even though it can be frustrating. And
by our guys, you're talking about the volunteers you've got working with.
These elders, that, man, you're having an impact. Because you don't see it right away does not mean you're not having an impact. And so you're kind of fighting upstream.
Right.
Because these children are who they are before you get to see them. And in a 7-week period of time, you're not going to transform a young person, but you're planting seeds.
Well, plus the fact you've got 200 kids, you're not going to transform, even with the most successful program, you're not going to transform 200.
Right.
If you transform 100 or 90 or 80, just think of the improvement that makes. I mean, I can remember, this is jumping to a different subject, but I remember talking to a Mormon missionary in England once. I was in England, and my dad was from a Mormon family. I was interested in it. So I said, you know, when you're a missionary, how many people do you feel like you'll convert in your 2 years of mission work? And he said, gosh, if we do two, it's really great.
Two people?
Two. And so then you think, well, they're just multiplying. They got millions of missionaries, and so they get, each of them gets two, and you end up, so, you know, you eat an elephant a bite at a time.
Right.
And, you know, in some respects, that's what's involved with solving the city problems. We got to start eating that elephant.
But I have, you know, as you go back And you look at things and you analyze it and say, well, what can we do better? You know, as we take a look at this thing now 5 weeks into it, and one of the biggest concerns, I think, is the age difference between a 10-year-old, the development stages of a 10-year-old and a 15-year-old, and they're at different stages, and so the elders are finding trouble with. It's harder to be a man with a 10 to 12-year-old than it is a 13 to 15-year-old.
I think it has to do with that frontal lobe you're talking about. Actually, they are different people.
Right. They're different people.
Yeah.
And so we've got them together, and we're just realizing that can't work.
Yeah,
the 15-year-old is a little bit too advanced to be around a 10-year-old.
Well, this program, you have aspirations for this to become a bigger than 200 program, right?
Well, there's conversations about moving it to 1,000.
Right.
And then there's conversations about national.
Well, it's scalable. I mean, it certainly is scalable. Right. The way you're organizing it, it's scalable because you're breaking it down into groups and subgroups. And so it should be scalable once you know, it's something that has to be improved and analyzed and figured out, but you're in the process of doing that.
Well, you know, there's also conversations of interest nationally with groups that and other states that are kind of looking at us. And so I'm really excited about it, Sandy. I will say this.
Well, let me ask you one thing.
Go ahead.
In the long run, I know that this is going to be requiring money. You know, you're going to end up having executive directors. You're going to end up paying some of these people, these mentors. You need people to be the organization. And there's going to be quite a bit of infrastructure you're going to need.
Yeah, no question.
But to date, you've done this without raising any money, haven't you?
Yeah, no, well, you know.
You could have raised money, but you haven't accepted it, is what you are.
We haven't accepted any money from the business community.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we're ready to do that. And I know in a lot of nonprofits, their thing is always, let's get money, let's get the money, let's get the money. And I'm not blaming anybody.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that people aren't doing good work. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm just saying we're not ready. My organization, Voices of the Elders. And I don't like referring to it. It's my organization. It's all of these men.
Yeah.
Right? It was just a vision that I had.
It was an epiphany. It was your epiphany.
Yeah, but it would be nothing without the men.
Absolutely. It's a team.
Yeah, so it's what the men.
Well, my hat's off to you, because I think the real, you know, the most important thing in an organization is team building, and the best leader is someone who's not very recognizable as being the leader because the organization is so prominent, and you're doing that already, so that's fantastic.
Well, I'm honored by that, Sandy, and you know, as long as we know that we're making a difference in the lives of those children,
yeah,
and not only are we making a difference in their lives, their families. I've had parents say to me, "Mister, that money that you're giving, I've got two kids there, and that $400 a week makes a difference in our lives," right?
Yeah, yeah.
Got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. It's Friday. That means Friday's with Sandy Williams. We'll be right back.